Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, July 30th. I'm Ray Graff. History is back on the table. Today, we welcome back Catherine Sheehan, the executive director of the Hart Clewitt Museum and the Rensselaer County and Troy City historian, a native of Troy. Kathy has lectured on various local history topics, including Uncle Sam, the Underground Railroad, public health, women's suffrage, agriculture, and the changing landscape of the county. And since it's summer, we'll talk a little baseball, specifically the factory leagues, and many other topics. If you have a regional history question, give us a call. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Catherine Sheehan, history and your calls coming up right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us today is Catherine Sheehan, the executive director of the Hart Clewitt Museum and the Rensselaer County and Troy City historian, a native of Troy. Kathy's career at the museum began as an intern from the public history program at SUNY Albany. She's currently working on a publication entitled Architecture Worth Saving in Rensselaer County, revisited 50 years later. Catherine has lectured on local history and recently has been a location and historic background advisor for HBO's The Gilded Age. She has appeared on national and international shows, including on C-SPAN, the History Channel, Russian and Japanese TV. Kathy can often be seen given tours through downtown Troy and Oakwood Cemetery. Always great to have her on the show. If you would like to join the history conversation, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. And before I begin, I want to thank Sarah LaDuc, who did such a splendid job filling in while I was on vacation. So thank you, thank you, thank you, Sarah LaDuc. Hey, Kathy Sheehan, how are you?
Hello, Ray. How are you?
How is your summer going?
It's been going good. It's been very busy. You mentioned the Gilded Age. They're getting ready. The streets of Troy are bustling again.
Oh, they're going to shoot another round?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're doing season three.
Wow.
Yeah. Yes.
And do you get big cha-ching every time that happens?
No.
No? Oh, you definitely need a better agent.
No. Yeah, this is true.
It's funny. You know, you made a comment before we started the show that I think is so interesting. You said in the old days, museums weren't that crowded in the summertime, and now it's busy, busy, busy. Why do you think that is?
I don't know. It was funny. It seemed, I don't know if it was just general the heat or the fact that, you know, now, particularly in downtown Troy, where we're located in the historic district, it's just we have the farmers market now the last, you know, 20 years.
Yeah.
And so really, since that's came in and we get thousands of people in Troy, it's just our street traffic is just better. Well, so it's great.
What do you have in store for the folks doing the Gilded Age? What are they asking you about this time?
It was interesting. They were looking at kind of the next level of the kind of nouveau riche maybe that were coming in. You know, who are the next maybe middle managers and things. So like the area out on the east side, if anybody's familiar with the area around the Emma Willard School, Pauline Avenue out that way, those really beautiful houses, they were, you know, some of the vice presidents of these big corporations and things. And so they're probably going to be filming out there on Pauline. So that's a little different area than they were filming downtown.
We are joined today by Catherine Sheehan. We talk history every so often on this program. Kathy is the executive director of the Hart Clewitt Museum and also the Rensselaer County and Troy City historian. Got to say, when we went up to Maine last week, we took the long route. I get very irritated in traffic. And if you get close to 495 and 95, it just bottles up in the summer. So we go up through Vermont and New Hampshire and take the nice scenic route. And I got a chance to drive through Rensselaer County. And it was pretty funny. I mean, my memory's horrible. But I went by places and areas and little streets and things. I said, oh, God, we talked about this. Where did I talk? Oh, yeah, it was with Catherine Sheehan. That's right. It's an exciting I love talking about history. And then when you see a place, it all crystallizes.
It does. Yeah.
It's an exciting thing. Just quickly, before we get into our topic at hand, and we've got a few that we wanted to discuss. And if you at home have a question for Catherine Sheehan, give us a call, 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. In the intro to this segment, I mentioned your publication that you're working on, Architecture Worth Saving in Rensselaer County Revisited 50 Years Later. How are we coming along with it?
We're coming along. I'm working on the script. I've done most of the photography that I want, which is, you know, when you're traversing the 460 square miles of Rensselaer County, it took a while. and it became the biggest challenge was, where do I cut it off? Because there is so much incredible architecture in this whole Capital Region area, really, from Dutch all the way up to, you know, some really interesting, you know, think about buildings that are built in the 50s now are eligible from the National Register.
Okay, so, this is interesting. So when you say I have to know where to cut off, know when to say when, is that a specific time? Do you say I'm going to go to 1950 or 1920?
I've picked it up to where if a building could be eligible now for the National Register. So and I was going back a few years. I'm looking at buildings kind of in the 30s and 40s, maybe. You know,
so much of the old Dutch stuff is gone.
Yeah, well, you know, there's more than you would think, Ray. It's particularly houses. You know, I mean, we have several in Rensselaer County. There's a bunch over here in Albany County, and Schenectady County has too. So I think it's a little more than we would think, and certainly not even just homes, but barns and, you know, things like buildings like that. So. It's, you know, sometimes they're kind of hiding in plain sight.
We're joined by Catherine Sheehan today. It's History on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is the number. Now, when we were discussing what sort of general topics we'd hit today, you said, let's talk about baseball. And I said, wow, that's not what I would have expected. What's your angle?
What's my angle? You know, I love baseball. I really do.
What's your team?
I don't really have one name. I guess the Yankees.
No,
you're a Mets fan.
Sorry. Zach the engineer is clapping. That means it's a terrible choice. All right, but anyway, we'll
But, you know, I actually, I had two great uncles that both played Major League Baseball. One played for the Philadelphia Athletics, and the other one played for the Boston Braves back in the early 20s.
Right.
And so, you know, I have history. My grandfather always, we grew up with watching, you know, the games on television and, you know, doing like that. And my husband was an enormous baseball fan. He was just, and he was a Brooklyn Dodgers fan.
Oh, yeah. So, my dad, too. Yeah. So, okay.
So he loved the Brooklyn Dodgers. So baseball's just kind of in our blood. And it's just one of those, you know, there's something about baseball that I don't think you see in other sports. There's something about the mysticism there. One of my favorite movies is Field of Dreams. And, you know, there's that great line, that speech that James Earl Jones gives at the very end. You know, and he said that, you know, the baseball marks the time. And, you know, no matter what's going on and buildings crumble and industries fall in there, but there's always baseball. And from the simplest thing of a kid playing catch out in the backyard to, you know, somebody hitting it over the fence at the Albany Colony Yankee. I mean, now think about Derek Jeter was out here. You know,
I hear about
over
that
at the
a lot.
Airport. Yeah, I know.
Ian Pickus
was
a huge Yankee fan, and I never hear the end of that.
I know. I know. It's you know, and then all the other players. I mean, we had like five or six Hall of Famers just from Troy, the Haymakers.
Okay. Let's talk about the Haymakers. Yeah. You brought a great picture, which obviously no one can see on the radio, but this is an old 1924 picture of the
This is like 1870s.
I thought it said 1924.
Yeah, no, that was the accession number.
very nice. So this is an old school baseball team.
This is from a glass plate negative, actually, that was taken. And this is when the team was playing up in what is now Knickerbocker Park, up by the high school, and under, if you think of, know where Oakwood Cemetery is, on the flats.
Yeah.
Over by Lansingburg. And there's actually there's a ball field there that people play all the time. And there's actually a memorial to the Haymakers, you know, because they are one of the first teams in the National League.
So this was what we would call a major league team today.
Yeah, yeah, and they still are officially, you know, somewhat honorarily in the major leagues.
Oh, that's so
and
cool.
It's really cool.
Yeah,
and one of the things that we have in our collection, I did not bring that out today. It's in the vault, but we have a scrapbook from the Haymakers. And it's kind of an interesting story how it came to us. It was something I heard about for years through my husband's family and a good friend of his. He was a ball boy for the Haymakers. This guy, Rich Everton, his great-grandfather was a ball boy. They lived down South Troy. And he says, you know, there's a scrapbook. I mean, I literally heard about this for well over 30, 40 years. And I said, oh, come on. I said, really, it doesn't exist. And all at once, it showed up. Mm. It was after Rich had died and after another family member. And this cousin called me up and he said, guess what I found? We found it cleaning out the house. We found the scrapbook.
Wow.
It was amazing. It was just amazing. So we had just finished a baseball exhibit at the museum that we were highlighting a lot of the Valley Cats and things like that. And but the Albany Institute was doing a big exhibit. And so they called and said, could we put it in the exhibit? So I'm like, sure. And John Thorne, who is the historian for Major League Baseball, came up to do a lecture as part of the exhibit. And Chris Miles, who was the director then, called me. She said, would you come over and talk to John Thorne and tell him the story about how you ended up with this book? I said, sure. And it was, what was really fun was I showed up there on a Sunday afternoon, and there's like 80% guys, 20% women. It's just the way it is, baseball.
Yeah, not in my house.
Not in your house? Well, no, I know. We got a lot of women who love baseball. I have a sister who is a really crazy, devout Yankee fan, way more than me. But anyway, so I sat down with him, and I'm telling the story, and I can see all these guys are like, who is she? How come she's getting to talk to John?
Oh, that's amazing. Well, you know, I'm surprised the Hall of Fame hasn't said, can we have that?
Yeah, well, they're not going to get it.
Have you digitized it?
We have not yet. We've been actually indexing it because it has all these, just all the early ball scores.
Amazing.
And there's talk about Johnny Morrissey. Of course, you know, Johnny Morrissey is so famous for Saratoga for starting the racetrack, but he was involved in baseball and betting games.
Yes.
I mean, baseball was a very rough and tumble thing. It's not all, you know, organized and things like it was now. And there was just all sorts of crazy things that were going on way before the whole, you know, Black Sox scandal and
I gotta
things like
see
that.
Okay, I have to see that.
So
I have to go
see,
to the vault.
See, now you have to come into the, you'll come to the vault. I will take it out to show it
all
to
right,
you.
All right, let's take a quick break here. Catherine Sheehan's our guest. It's history, and we are just getting started. Do you got anything on your mind history related? 800-348-2551 is the number. We'll be right back. Fox Pop on WAMC, 800-348-2551. That's the telephone number if you have a history topic you want to bring up with Catherine Sheehan, who is Executive Director of the Hart Clewitt Museum and the Rensselaer County and Troy City Historian. I call her Catherine Sheehan on the show because, you know, there's another Kathy Sheehan around in the listening area who's, you know, has an important job. And I don't, you have a very important job, and I don't want to confuse the two of you. So I'll call you Catherine on this show, but we go by
we
Kathy.
We go by Kathy.
Yeah, fair
I'm
enough.
Kathy.
The
yeah.
number here is 800-348 2551. The email is voxpop@wamc.org. This email from Eric. I am a distant relative of the Mabee family. I found a website for the homestead. My question for you is if you have any stories connected to the Mabee family.
I don't personally, but I would certainly contact the Mabee Farm is part of the Schenectady County Historical Society, and it's one of their sites. Of course, they're down on Washington Avenue in the Stockade is their main museum center, and they have an amazing research library there.
Ah.
So they should really contact them and set up an appointment.
It's such a prominent name.
It is. Yeah. And the Mabee Farm is amazing. I don't know if you've ever been out there in Rotterdam.
Probably.
It's really quite wonderful.
Yeah.
They acquired that from the family, probably 30 years ago now. It doesn't seem like it's been that long, but it probably has been. Yeah.
Let's go to our phone lines now. Number is 800-348-2551. Still trying to remember how to do the show.
It's what happens when you go on vacation,
oh, my
right?
gosh. I was totally tuned out.
There you go.
I was sitting on the beach and got a text. Not a text. I got my daughter, oldest daughter came over with her phone. Biden just dropped out of the race. And I said, what? And then I had to towel off and run up and watch the news. Let's go to William and Troy. William, you're on.
Kathy.
Hello, William.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. Hello. How are you? Listen, I live at 200 Oakwood Avenue.
Okay.
Which is the house built by Jenny Vanderheiden, I believe.
Okay.
I think I know
are
the one you
familiar
mean.
Familiar with the house? Yes. Now, 10 years ago, I was offered an opportunity to refurbish a small cottage that sits on a hill right next to 200 Oakwood Avenue, the house. It's called the Murder House, if I believe.
Ah, the old Murder House.
The Murder House.
Yes, the old Murder House.
Why do they call it a Murder House, William? What happened?
What's that?
Why is it the Murder House? What happened?
Well, back in the late 1800s, Jenny Vanderheiden, who actually built this house, had a farmhouse here, and her husband murdered her father.
Ouch.
It was a very famous story back in the late 1800s.
Huh. Yeah.
They're buried in Oakwood Cemetery. Yeah.
Yes. Actually, they are.
Yep.
Jenny and her other family members are buried here. My question is, and I don't want to go too long because I'm so curious about the house because I know there's a lot of history to the house. I live in that small cottage, and I've been restoring it for 10 years, and I would love to know if there's any information at all. The story goes that when Jenny got to be around 60 years old, she had this cottage built in like 1919, she wanted to sit on the hill and look at her house because she loved it so much.
Huh.
That's how the story goes.
Well,
and I can verify everything because I have been restoring it for so long, and you can tell by the size of the lumber and the sure. and the nails used that this goes way, way back.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, that's
my
very cool.
Is,
it's.
How do I get?
Go ahead.
Well, my question was, how do I get more information? I've fallen in love with this cottage, and I would like to know a little more history about it. Where would I go to find that?
Well, come right down to the Historical Society at the Harcourt Museum. We have a research library,
okay.
And if you have access to a computer, we suggest that you actually make an appointment online. And if you just click on our main page at harcourt.org, and you'll be able to see a link, a tab that says research, and then you can make an appointment to come in to use our library, and we will be able to help you out and flesh out the story. One of the interesting things that we have at our site is we have the library archives of the Lansingburg Historical Society as well, because they're an all-volunteer organization. So because we have regular hours, they move the archives down so we can use their archives as well. And because that's a Lansingburg story.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Hey, William, before I let you go here, you know, are you seeing any, there was a terrible murder? Are you seeing any ghosts rolling around?
No, as a matter of fact, I've thought about that over the years, but I'm afraid, you know, living right next to the cemetery, everything is very quiet.
Okay.
I've never had any kind of experience or anything like that. Now, there are stories, and it's hard because the owner that had the house a few years ago, she passed away. Mm-hmm. But she had given me some stories about the house, and there was some kind of literature written up about the entire murder and how it took place.
Yeah.
I went back to the New York Times. I went into and I researched it, and sure enough, there's all kinds of articles about the murder.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
How the murder occurred and how they it's very fascinating. As a matter of fact, I understand that it was so famous back then that people would take horse carriage rides up here to Oakwood, the cemetery, to see the quote unquote murder.
Yeah. Well, William, thanks
a lot. Yeah, it's a colleague of mine, Warren Broderick, who's been involved with the Lansingburg Historical Society for years, and his mother was a Lansingburg historian. He wrote a wonderful article about that, and I think we have a copy of that in our research library. So when you come down, we'll pull that information for you.
William, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. You take tours around Oakwood Cemetery
all the time. I just did one 2 weeks ago.
Kathy Sheehan, any ghosts in your?
Oh, there's lots of spirits.
No, have you seen any?
Nah.
Nah?
Nah.
You buy that stuff?
Yeah. Yeah, I do.
You
but
do?
Yeah. But there's nothing any of this. Yeah.
Okay, fair
that's
enough.
Fine. Yeah.
All right, let's go to Avril Park, and it's Teresa's turn. Teresa, you're on with Catherine Sheehan.
Hi, Catherine. Hi, Ray.
Hi.
I live in Avril Park, like I said. The old Carpiac farm, and I remember at a neighborhood kind of party years ago, the Carpiacs, the older families, members who passed away said the Albany Senators used to practice. It was a baseball team on the plot of land that I now own, over 2 acres. So I was wondering if you've ever heard of them.
Oh, I've heard of the Albany Senators. Oh, sure.
They played over at...
played at Hawkins Stadium.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I think didn't they play over in Bleecker Stadium?
Yes, they did.
Yeah.
Yes, they did. Yeah, because they were around for a long time. And Hawkins Stadium was up in Menands, right near where, if you were around here a long time, you would remember it was Tops, department store, and now it's a state, New York State offices. It's right on Broadway. Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Well, that's interesting.
It would surprise me. You know what was interesting about a lot of these baseball teams that were around earlier is you not only had, the New York State League and then these, double A affiliate leagues and things like that. Then there were also they played for their factories. And so, it's so different now when we think of baseball players. It's so professional. They got done with the season. They go back to work.
Yeah.
They go back and work in the factories.
Amazing.
So, which is kind of cool. So factories played other factories and,
How much Teresa, thanks for the call. How much documentation is on these factory teams from, we're talking 1800s, late 1800s?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah. Anything after the post-Civil War.
Amazing.
There's actually quite more than you would think. And if we have some records from factories that, list the guys who are playing, they're all those line scores, they would put them in the paper too, and it gets my plug every time I come down here. You want to go down a rabbit hole, go on to FultonHistory.com, that website, and, plug in the Albany Senators or, plug in the Berlin Bearcats is one of my favorites up in
Berlin Bearcats.
Berlin Bearcats.
Okay.
Yeah. And, they were like you think of little barnstorming teams and, they went around. They played these other leagues.
It's funny, though, the big players, Babe Ruth and all these guys, they barnstormed and
they were
all
here.
I have a picture of Hawkins Stadium and I know they were there. Mm-hmm. Every time I drive on 787, I try to picture where Hawkins Stadium was and I still have trouble sometimes as I'm driving.
It literally is right where Tops was.
Amazing. Yeah, Catherine Sheehan's our guest today. It's history, 800-348-2551. The email is voxpop@wamc.org. Let's see. Bob writes in. Bob says, I would like to suggest that the Gilded Age film some of our ice yachts from the 1800s this winter. Hopefully conditions will allow it to happen. These craft were the fastest vehicles on Earth at the time. Captured the imagination of all the wealthy scions of the Hudson River, even Jacob Rupert of Rhinecliff and Yankee owner who brought Babe Ruth to New York City, campaigned a number of ice yachts. We'd like to promote these craft that are lovingly restored and sail every opportunity on the Gilded Age. That's from Bob, who is the president of the Hudson River Ice Yacht Preservation Trust.
That's wonderful. I fully endorse that. And next time I see any of the producers, I'll put a plug in for that. And it makes me think of how much activity was going on in the Hudson. And, we were talking about summer recreation things, not just baseball. We have in our collection this amazing Waters paper racing skull. And this is the scullers. You see the scullers going up and down the rivers and the kids up at Saratoga. There were two young ladies who were in the Olympics. The skull. They didn't make they didn't make the cut. But they were over there. And this guy did layers. It's like a light, almost like a balsa wood frame in the 1860s. 1868 is his patent. And then he covered it with lacquered paper. So it was very light. His dimensions are what the racing skulls are today.
Oh, interesting.
So we have literally had people come from around the world to see it's a very rare example, our Elisha Waters paper racing skull. And after about the 1870s, you could get the sliding seat. It would have an outrigger to it. And this, it's patent. It's in the patent. His patent is in the, you know, the patent office and everything. And very famous. And this was a guy, again, on the Hudson. He was up in Lansingburg.
Amazing.
But all these things that were going, so all the, and especially this time, as that our gentleman had said, you had these boat clubs, and people had, this is the whole thing of leisure time. And this was kind of where I was kind of going with this whole thing today, was we didn't have leisure time up until you started to have unions who, you know, so we're not going to work, you know,
every day,
every single solitary 12, 13, 14 hours a day. They started to get reduced hours and usually had Sunday afternoon off, which is when you have baseball games and people promenading through the park. Think of the other things that people do as, you know, more passive kind of summer activities. Look at Albany's Washington Park, our Prospect Park in Troy, Central Park in Schenectady. You know, these are beautiful city parks, and they incorporate passive activities like strolling to then even playground equipment starts coming in. Nobody thought about that. It's like playground equipment for kids is relatively new, like 1900, you know, as the time flies.
Does it occur to you that because of your profession, you know everything? Seriously.
No, I'm just interested in a lot of it.
Let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551 is the number if you want to talk history with Catherine Sheehan from the Hart Clewitt Museum and Rensselaer County and Troy City Historian. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. And we'll get to the email bag in a little bit. Right now, let's go to Greenfield, Mass. Steve, you're on.
Hi. I can't believe someone was talking about the Troy Haymakers. There's only 24 guys in history that won 300 or more games, and two of them got their start as young pitchers with Troy, Mickey Welch and Tim Keith.
And both are Hall of Famers, too, if I remember correctly.
They're both Hall of Fame 300-game winners, so I'm sure that they're in that scrapbook. And eventually, when Troy folded, they ended up with New York or the National League, and they won pennants together in 1889, I believe it was. But
yeah, a lot of those guys ended up at the New York Giants, which is now the San Francisco Giants, I think, for the moment,
right,
unless they're moving again.
Now, in those days, there
managed
were no real—
by Jim Mutry.
Go ahead, Steve.
The stovepipe hat.
In those days, did they have minor leagues? Did they have, like—
It's a real hoot to hear you talking about that, so I want to thank you.
Appreciate it, Steve. In those days, were there established and organized minor leagues, or was it just—
No, that doesn't come to a little bit later. It was— you had what was interesting that when they called the Haymakers, it was really kind of a derision because they were going to like down to Brooklyn and playing some of the hoity-toity teams,
right?
And so they were kind of looked down on them, and they say, "Oh yeah, here comes these farmer kids from upstate," and of course they beat them. Like they played on the down in Brooklyn on the the grounds that were down there,
not the Polo Grounds.
Near the Polo Grounds.
They were in Manhattan, though, right?
Yeah, they were. I think so. Yeah, but that was, and then they played the Red Stockings.
Right. Precursor.
That was one of the big awful things that happened that Johnny Morrissey got involved in. Literally, the Haymakers had to escape in the middle of the night over bad bets.
Really?
Yeah, really.
Oh, and it was all over gambling.
It was all over gambling. Yeah.
The number here is 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. When I was a kid, there were at least one, maybe more, Johnny Evers sporting goods stores. Mm-hmm. I don't know when they stopped being a thing, but it wasn't that long ago.
No, it wasn't that long ago. Johnny Evers, of course, he's part of the famous Tinkers to Evers to Chance.
Yeah.
And he's a Troy boy.
Amazing.
He was born in Troy and, you know, played for the Cubs and Chicago.
Right.
And he was quite a character.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then when he retired, he went into the sporting good business. Yeah.
I mean,
and someplace right here on Central Avenue, I think, is where his
I remember
where
going
his
there.
Was.
I mean, I wasn't that long
ago. I think
it was 70s maybe they stopped.
Maybe he died in like 47.
Right.
I think his other family members took it on. He had a nephew.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Let's take a quick break here. Catherine Sheehan's our guest. Then we'll check the email bagging back to the phones. 800-348-2551. It's history today on the program. We'll be right back. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. Catherine Sheehan is here, and we talk history. This email from Sherry at voxpop@wamc.org. Subject heading, The French. Sherry writes, there's a historical marker near the old canal in Schuylerville. It says that when the canal was built, the remains of a French garrison were found, which makes perfect sense. Hmm. But the way the history is taught, it makes it sound like everything started with the Dutch and English. The French were here in this neck of the woods way before. Have you experienced any situations like this where part of the story simply isn't told?
Yeah. You know, who gets to tell the story? It's a great question. And I think it's one of the things that we try to be much more aware of now is try to tell the whole story of things that are going on.
But you never can.
Yeah, well, it depends on how much information you have. We know the French were there. Think of the French and Indian Wars. You know, we're up on Lake George and up on Lake Champlain, and they absolutely were here. And it's like during the American Revolution. You know, we talk so much about all the you were just over in New England.
Yeah.
You know, all you hear about, the Patriots, and nobody ever talks about the Tories.
That's a great point.
And it's a good point.
And we discussed that before.
I think we did, yeah.
That ties in with the Uncle Sam story a little bit, right?
No, that was War of 1812.
War of 1812. Yeah. Gotcha.
No, but American, but it is. And, I mean, just think about, too, just one of the things that we've been trying to re-pull back together is that we all forget about the Native American story that is here. I mean, they're here.
Yeah.
You know, so everybody else came after them. So, but you're trying to find some, real information, whether it's archaeological or, you find from oral histories that are passed down, and just trying to understand that all those levels of people that have, traversed this, area here up in the Northeast. It's pretty amazing. And they all have different accomplishments and contributions.
How do you vet oral histories? You know, when you do an archaeological dig, you have things you can look at and sort of make suppositions and test hypotheses and things. That was for this, and that was by this. When you have a written record, it's clearer still. Mm-hmm. But oral histories require a different kind of vetting. How do you go about doing that?
Well, I mean, you have to at least accept what the person feels that they saw, witnessed, enacted on. And you take it at that face value. Now, you might be able to say, well, we have this other document that would completely dispute it, or it says, this is what happened. So, from our perspective, we don't try to pass the judgment. We just try to put the information out there and let people draw their own conclusions on which way it is. The oral history, and even our written histories, they're all coming from, everybody has a bias.
Yeah.
I don't care who you are.
How do you filter that?
Right.
How do we know what really happened?
That's why you want to go, always dig in for more sources. Keep digging.
Okay.
Which is the fun part of the
When the robots take over, this is going to be very easy.
Well, it's a very, we talk about AI stuff. It's like, I know Ed, he's done shows with
Jim Handler.
Jim Handler,
yeah.
He'll be on
next week.
We'll he'll be on next AI week. Show, yeah, I know. So when you think about AI, people say, oh, well, this happened here. People are writing in and you find something.
Yeah.
And I'll know it's wrong. Like there's Wikipedia entries. I just know they're wrong.
Yeah.
Flat out wrong.
Well, sometimes they're right.
A lot of them they're not. See,
This is from James. Here you go. Here's a philosophical question. As a historian, how do you feel about that old saying, those who don't remember the past are destined to repeat it? When you take a look at all that is happening in the world today, do you feel like that old saying rings true? And that's from James.
James, absolutely. When I hear people say, this has never happened before, I went, nope, yes, it has. We have gone through these things many times. You just don't remember. People say, oh, we weren't ever taught that history. You probably were. You just didn't. I'm sure you were. New York State history, I know you were at some point. We have several history teachers that volunteer for us. And like, yes, we did. We taught the civics. So, history definitely repeats itself.
All right. This is from Christopher, and we'll get back to the phones in a minute. 800-348-2551. If you'd like to talk to Catherine Sheehan, or Kathy Sheehan, if you will, 800-348-2551 or voxpop@wamc.org. Christopher writes, I live in Claremont, and I'm coordinating an exhibit about the Native American history in our local towns and Columbia County. Is there any information in Rensselaer collections?
We do, actually. Not a ton, but we do have some, and I think some of it is some oral history, some are deeds, things like that. So I would strongly encourage you to come on up to Troy and make an appointment. We'd be glad to sit down with you.
Okay, fair enough. Kathy in Clintondale says, I'm 81 years old, lived at my grandmother's house in Albany during World War II. In 1945, my dad returned from the war. We built a house in Slingerlands. I recall something of an amusement park, maybe with a roller coaster near Cahoes when I was young. Was there such a place? And that's from Kathy in Clintondale.
Oh, it was, kind of near Cahoes, just over there. There was Miami Beach.
What?
there was, with the roller coasters, and it had a carousel and things like that. Miami Beach was out where the water filtration plant is now in Troy.
You're kidding me.
No, I'm kind of heading out of Troy and going into Spiegeltown up that way. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, it was right there. Unless, now, there could have been another one I'm not thinking about, maybe, that was on the other side of the river, maybe near Guptals up that way.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there may have been something up that way, too.
Interesting. But, well, I'm 60, just turned 60 in May, and I have the vaguest recollection, and this is obviously not ancient history, but it's close enough, of a zoo on your side of the river. I think it was Fox's Zoo. Is that correct?
Yes. Very good, right? It was up in Hoosick.
I was bitten by an ostrich there. That's why I still remember.
Really?
It.
Oh, that's right. Yes, Fox's Zoo is right up off between Route 67 and 7, up in the north end of Hoosick.
It's long gone. Yeah.
Oh, long gone. Yeah, but they were there well into the 80s.
Okay, I was there in the early 70s, and I had a Mets logo on my T-shirt. And apparently the ostrich, it was the petting zoo section, really loved the colors and just took a nip right out of it in my chest. And I had the mark for a good several years.
Wow.
Should have sued him.
Should have sued him.
But I didn't. Because that's what my father said. No, you don't sue. 800-348-2551. One more email and then we'll jump back to the phones. You can always email us and we'll try to get to your emails before we wrap it here today. Matt writes in. Could you give a brief history on the origin of the Freer Park Golf Course?
Oh, very fun. Yes, so the Freer Park Golf Course, that's interesting. Miss William Freer, who donated the land to the city of Troy for the golf course, his house was basically where, if anybody knows that about Troy, there's a big fountain there if you come in off of Oakwood. So his house was over there. He donated the land for a park. He also, I love this part of Mr. Freer. Mr. Freer donated money to the city of Troy schools so that every single elementary school would have a pool. So all kids could take swimming lessons. He was very concerned about kids drowning in the Hudson River, particularly, and it distressed him to no end. And so he, in his will, he gave money for all the pools. So people came to Troy and go, why do you have all these pools? Every single elementary school and the middle school and the high school all had pools. Yeah, and
that's
that was
amazing.
His. But along with that, he, of course, donated park. And then those neighborhoods around there in the area of Park Boulevard over by St. Mary's Hospital, Oakwood 15th Street, 14th, that was all settled right in the 1920s. And there was a wonderful arcade building, which is still there. It's kind of used more for golf equipment and things like that. But, yeah.
Does it hurt you when a building like that with historical significance is used as a shed?
A little bit. It's a really, really cool building.
Yeah.
And it overlooks the tennis courts now. I think they could do, who knows, maybe be able to turn it around and do something with it.
Catherine Sheehan is our guest, the executive director of the Hart Clewitt Museum and the Rensselaer County and Troy City Historian. Let's go back to our phones at 800-348-2551. Richard is in Rensselaer. Richard.
Hi. I used to get maps and plans from the Department of Transportation, because you mentioned the Interstate 787. Before they built that, they did a survey of where they thought it might be, and they plotted all that out, and I used to be able to get them. But then I think it was Governor Pataki consolidated them. So would you know where I can obtain those historical plans now?
Hi, Richard. You should be able to get those at the New York State Archives. Any kind of state government records should be over there, and they're right in the They're either on the 7th or the 11th floor of the state education building. You know, you got the museum when you come in, and then the library and the state archives are on the upper floors. So all you have to do is go over to Albany, and they should have them.
In the museum?
Yep, upstairs from the museum, in the state archives or the New York State Library.
All right, thanks.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call.
Now, when you go to look at those, is there a reminder saying, hey, watch it, you'll tear this thing, or are they on microfiche or something like that?
I know they've digitized quite a few of them, but there's still a lot. You could probably steal the originals. They go over handling procedures. You know, you want to be sure your hands are clean and not to rest your elbows on them and
things like that. Don't
bring your Mountain Dew with you. Oh, no. You don't get to bring any of that kind of stuff with
you. Are you strict like that at the Hart Pluitt?
We are. Yeah, we don't only pencil in the library. I'm not, people think you have to use white gloves. Actually, when you're handling paper, it's almost worse to use a white glove because now you're rubbing it harder because you can't feel it. So we just ask people to really have very clean hands and to just turn one page at a time and to just, you know, be really careful and respectful of these documents. Frankly, the older documents held up much better than any documents after
the paper.
Right. They were using cotton and rag in that. But once you start getting the wood pulp, you know, after the, like, 1870 or so, those are the papers that make you nervous.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
Now, we talked about this wonderful scrapbook about the haymakers, and I asked if it was digitized, and you said, no, we haven't gotten to that yet. How much stuff is sitting in the back room or in the attic or whatever at the Hart Pluitt that has never been seen by most of us?
85%.
Really? And some of these are tangible objects, but...
Oh, sure. But listen, that's not just me. That's not just me. It'd be us. Every museum, only 15% of any museum's collection is out on public view at any one time.
Why?
Because you
there's
can't
just no room at the end?
You can't put it... Yeah, it would be open storage.
Right. But the digitization... A, is time-consuming.
Very time-consuming.
B, there has to be a certain amount of money involved to get the server space and everything else that you need and the technology to do it. But is your goal to digitize all those papers and pictures and everything?
Yep. I mean, you take we showed about this picture, this haymaker's picture before. So it takes about 30 seconds to put this through a scanner. It takes about 15 to 20 minutes to do the metadata that you need so that this can go on the web so somebody can search this and know that they're getting the haymaker's photo of this team in the field at the GPS points that were up in Lansingburg where it was. You have to physically input that. So it can be searchable. And even the big boys, the Smithsonian, the Library of Congress, maybe they're up to 40% of their collection. I mean, you've got to think about hundreds of years of papers and documents and artifacts and things like that. So everybody's working at it, but it takes a really long time and a lot of resources to do that.
Here's an interesting email from Bob, who says, I'm a distant relative of Stephen Van Rensselaer. Mm-hmm. As part of my mother's things, I have a quilt made by one of his granddaughters. I'm looking for an appropriate home for such a thing rather than simply hanging it around at the house. Do you have... a good place that I might donate it to? And that's from
Bob.
We
do. Now, the Van Rensselaers, of course, were on both sides of the river. So we'd have to kind of determine where she was. Is this, you know, because the Van Rensselaers had the west and the east side of the Hudson. So, you know, if he can send me an email at ksheehan@hartpluitt.org, and we can try and figure that out. It may be more appropriate at the State Museum or the Albany Institute, or maybe it's something that we might want at our museum. We have a wonderful quilt collection.
And do you make that call, or is there a board that makes that call?
We have our curator, Samantha Mahosky, makes that call.
Yeah.
So, and we do have a wonderful collections committee as well that we discuss those things with, but pretty much it's staff-driven.
Exciting. You know what?
Oh, you never know what's going to come in the door.
I get so excited by history. I'm sure I'm in the distinct
when
minority.
When you retire, Ray, you're going to have...
Yeah, and you never know. It could be tomorrow. Catherine Sheehan is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number. Let's go to Mark, who is in Monticello. Mark, you're on. Go ahead.
Hi there. How are you?
Good.
Hi.
I just wanted to ask a quick question about a town where I have friends who live in Rensselaer County called Scaticoke. And I just wondered if you could please share with the public how Scaticoke came to be called Scaticoke and with such a bizarre spelling. And why is that? Why is it called Scaticoke?
I can never spell it correctly. That's a great point. Thanks, Mark.
S-C-H-A-G-H-T-I-C-O-K-E. Scaticoke.
That's easy for you to say.
Easy for me to say.
All right, what's
the history? It's like Schenectady. That is a great early, again, Dutch name. The Knickerbocker family is up there. It also has there's a lot of Native Americans that were upsettling in Scaticoke. It's at the far end of our wonderful Rensselaer County. That's where the Scaticoke Fair is, speaking of our... which starts Labor Day week. You know, it's over Labor Day weekend.
Which is a cool fair.
Coming up. It's a very cool fair. And it runs along the Hoosick River. And so it had a lot of interesting agricultural as well as cable flax mills and you know, some heavy manufacturing. So it's a great town.
All right. Well, thanks for that call. You know, we didn't really get into the fair topic, but there's so much great history of that. Scaticoke Fair is a great fair. There are
Saratoga County just finished.
Up in Ballston Spa. Yep. And there are so many great fairs. Let's just talk for like a couple of minutes on that.
Yeah. Well, you know, they have such a long history because they're agriculture. You know, we say the Scaticoke Fair, you've got the, you know, what's the Altamont Fair.
Sure.
But they're all based in the agricultural societies that go way back to the, you know, early 19th century. It's like 1819 was the Rensselaer County Fair. And, you know, this was a way for the farmers to get the newest techniques, farming things, and for the other home bureaus and all that kind of stuff all happens at the fair. You know, I think most people think about the rides and things, but boy, there's so much to see. You know, after you see the rides, go and look at the buildings, because you know you still have the home bureau and you still have the 4-H and you know all those wonderful organizations that you know are all displaying all the things they work on. The kids, I love the kids, the kids 4-H stuff. You know, they're
so much
wonderful.
Of that was near in the Altamont
Fair.
It burned. Yeah. I mean, it was such a tragedy that burned.
It was.
Well, we have another couple of minutes here with Catherine Sheehan. And what is on your agenda coming up here at the Hart Clewitt?
Well, getting ready for the Scaticoke Fair.
Are you going to go?
Yeah. Oh, I'm there every... Oh, you can see me for the entire fair.
Really?
I'm there in the New York Products Building. And we were going to be doing an exhibit on Dutch architecture. I do a panel exhibit every year on some various aspect of Rensselaer County history. And this year it's going to be about... Since we just celebrated the 400th anniversary of Fort Orange and the Dutch here, I'm going to talk about the Dutch architecture. And... So that'll start. Yeah, it's before Labor Day weekend. Tuesday, I think it's a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday.
What's the oldest house in Rensselaer County?
It's an early Dutch house.
How old though?
Oh, 1767.
So nothing remains from the 1600s.
No, not that I know of at the moment. Not 1600s.
It's so funny. Yeah. Driving home, we took the scenic route home to and from Maine. And so we went through Vermont and then and New Hampshire and into Maine and then reverse on the way back. Coming back, I was in Rensselaer County, and there was a old farm. Maybe it was still on the Vermont side. I don't know. But there was just the foundation of a building. Mm. And how many of those are there that got covered over by soil and dirt that are not found yet?
Yeah, a lot. And then think about when you kept coming down, looking across the Tomahannock Reservoir, that was all farmland.
Amazing.
And farms, too, that were also, you know, they to create the reservoir. Yeah, but that's the beauty of having old maps, like the gentleman that had called before. You can find them. You can pinpoint where they all were and trace that foundation and know whose house it was.
Listen, can we make this a seven-hour show?
No one might listen
after 5 hours, but I want to do it. Catherine Sheehan, how do people find out more about the Hart Clewitt?
Just go to our website at hartclewitt.org for all of our tours and talks. And we have a big house tour coming up. In downtown Troy, Gilded Age. That's going to be on September 19th. So get your tickets. It's going to be fun. 10 houses, and come see me.
You
I'm
are
there
so
all
much
the time.
Fun. Have don't eat too many fried doughs at the fair.
Nope. Not me.
We will see you soon. Support right. comes from Thanks. Plaza Travel Center, presenting trips escorted by owner Gene Gagnon. A trip to Japan in October and to Scotland in April. For trip details, gene@plazatravel.net. Fatigan's Nursery, Latham, New York, featuring flowering planters, annuals, perennials, vegetable and herb starts, organic soils. Over 100 years of gardening experience, family-owned and operated, fatigans.com. And Phoenix Theaters, Beacon Cinema in historic downtown Pittsfield, now offering reserved seating featuring all heated recliners, beer and wine, and Fathom events including Met Opera Live, phoenixmovies.net. Once again, thanks to Catherine Sheehan for being here today. Thank you for listening. Thanks for the calls and the emails. Thanks to Zach Malloy. Thanks to Ed Rosen, who screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow it's Bob Scott and David Tripp. Stamps und Coins, we'll see you too.